This is week two of a four-week series on spiritual friendship. And last week, we spoke about what is the spiritual life, and specifically this word spiritual, what is spiritual. We explored that. And then this week, we're going to explore what is spiritual friendship. And another question that immediately arises from that question is, well, how does that differ from ordinary friendship? And then on Saturday, we'll be having a day retreat, which will be very much about putting spiritual friendship into practice. And then the following Wednesday, we'll be exploring how is spiritual friendship a path of transformation leading to liberation. And then on the fourth Wednesday of the month, Maitashri is going to be giving a talk, really a more of a personal account entitled, What I Have Learned from Spiritual Friendship. So what is spiritual friendship? Well, before we dive into that, I'm just going to recap the ground that we covered yesterday to remind us what we spoke about, and also to catch those catch up for people who were not here last week. Right, so around this question of what is a spiritual life, we described this this idea of the spiritual life in terms of a path and in terms of a goal. The path being relieving the suffering of ourselves and others, and the goal of extinguishing suffering or finding happiness that is reliable at all times and under all conditions. And then we also spoke about how we actually create suffering for ourselves and others. And the way that we do this, it fundamentally has to do with our desire to control our experience. And, of course, the way in which we want to control our experience is we want our experience to be pleasant, and we do not want our experience to be unpleasant. So this, of course, will manifest in terms of wanting these things which we believe will bring us pleasure and getting rid of things which we believe bring us pain. So this desire, this wanting manifests as kind of a demanding kind of relationship with our experience, and quite an adversarial relationship, if you will. Kind of like sandpaper. Like we're always kind of wrestling with our relation, with our experience in a particular way. So this can manifest as like, I must have things to be a particular way, or I must not have things to be a particular way. And then we will sometimes get what we want, in which case we arrive at now I'm happy, or we don't, in which case now I'm unhappy. And then this happiness here doesn't last. So around we go, round and around. And this is, I refer to this as the story of me. So it's very interesting, the story of me. Because the story of me, these narratives that we tell, they become the lens through which we view our entire experience. And that these stories that we tell actually affect how we perceive our experience. So I think a very good metaphor is that of putting on glasses. These stories that we tell are like glasses that we're wearing. And we filter everything through these stories of me. So for example, if I have a story, let's say my story is nobody likes me. Nobody likes me. I don't have any friends. Nobody likes me. And when I inhabit this story, when I put these glasses on, then I will tend to see things that reinforce that story or affirm that story. I will tend to see that. And I will tend not to see things that are not aligned with that story. So it's very interesting to explore this, the way that this story of me affects everything that we experience. So in terms of the path out of this story of me, then we spoke about the story of not me. And here I'm pointing really at this teaching of anatta, this teaching of no self. And no self, this teaching of no self, that there is no self. It's quite challenging to actually, to make any sense of that. What am I supposed to do with that? That doesn't make any sense. So rather than talking about no self, we spoke about this idea of a fixed self, which is quite fixated, constricted, demanding. And this movement towards a fluid self, a fixed self and a fluid self, where a fluid self is the self that is much more malleable, much more open, much more flexible, and is much more about, rather than demanding, the fluid self is much more based upon accepting our experience as it is without judgment. So this is where we ended up at the end of last week. So now this week, we're going to get into the whole question of, what is spiritual friendship? And, we're actually just going to first start with just a simple little meditation. And this meditation will be very much based upon the way in which Prasadachitta, who's no longer here, based upon the way in Prasadachitta likes to speak about the Metta-bhavana. So the way he does this around the Metta-bhavana, so for those of you not familiar with the Metta-bhavana, this is a core meditation practice that we teach here at the San Francisco Buddhist Center. The Metta-bhavana translates as the cultivation of universal loving kindness. And in this practice, you bring various people to mind, and you wish them well. So the way that Prasadachitta speaks about this is that we may notice in our relationship with other people, that other people will affect us in a very particular way. You know, so for example, I know Alaria quite well, I know Pete quite well, and when I'm with Alaria or with Pete, there's a particular feeling tone that arises in my heart, that arises in my experience. So it's very helpful to begin to tune into the experience of actually being with other people. And we can begin to notice that actually there are some people that we really like, that we're drawn towards. And there are other people that we and we tend to avoid. It kind of can rub us the wrong way for whatever reason. And there's other people we just kind of, I don't really mind. Kind of neutral, if you will. So I'd like to invite us all to just to sit quietly for a few moments. And we're just going to tune into just this experience of just sitting together. And I invite you to close your eyes, if they're not closed already. And just, can you sense the presence of the other people in the room? And just notice how this feels. Just notice any qualities of support, of caring, kindness. And now, just say to yourself, we are all in this together. Now, what underlies this story of me, of what I want, what I don't want, is the pleasure-pain principle. That's essentially what drives our decision-making process when we're engaged in this way of being in the world. We want what's pleasurable, we don't want what's painful. And the way out of this is actually to enter into a very different relationship with our experience that is not about the pleasure-pain principle, the pain-pleasure principle. Rather, the spiritual life is about opening up to the full breadth of our experience, regardless of the content. So this idea of opening the heart, this idea of becoming more accepting without judgment, that actually requires us to include the entire breadth of our experience, that which is pleasurable and also that which is painful. And in this opening of the heart, we move into what I've heard referred to as called the open dimension of being. I once heard a Buddhist teacher translate anatta, this teaching of no self, as the open dimension of being. So I think this is quite a beautiful turn of phrase, right? The open dimension of being. So we can notice this tendency at play in all of our relationships. Well, maybe not all of them, but certainly I experience them in all of my relationships. And what spiritual friendship is getting at? It's actually getting at accepting others without judgment. That's what the invitation is around spiritual friendship. So in terms of this experience of opening up, really, it's kind of pointing at opening up towards that the things which we find unpleasant, right? And usually the things we find unpleasant are things that tend to be out of our control and out of our control in a way that we don't like. So it's very interesting, you know, because really, if you think about one's experience, other people are completely outside of our control, right? Other people. So it's kind of interesting with spiritual friendship and community. So one of the taglines for this month was, you know, spiritual friendship is the whole of the spiritual life. And the other quote was, you know, community is great, except for the people. Mm-hmm. So there's always this kind of tension around isolation, and which really is, you know, created by the story of me. It's all about me. And this experience of belonging, this experience of community. And it can feel quite both uplifting to experience a sense of belonging, but also a sense of belonging can arise from just going along, you know, just tagging along, not actually showing up fully as one's true individual self, as one's authentic being, right? So when we come into community, we can also notice that there's a very strong desire that we all hold to be cared for, to be seen, to be heard, to be loved, to feel as if we're a part of something larger than ourselves. We long for this deeply, this connection with something larger. So we can enter into a community in such a way that where we just simply will do whatever everybody else is doing, just so that we can feel accepted, without actually thinking critically about what is actually happening. So spiritual friendship is not this. We're not just all trying to get along. We're not just all trying to allay our own personal sense of disconnection, of isolation. We're actually trying to transform ourselves, and we're trying to transform ourselves in relationship to other people. So how does this happen? What does this really mean? What's this getting at? Other people. And so in preparation for this month, I reread one of Sangharacha's books called What is the Sangha? And this is the one quote that just sort of leapt off the page at me, you know, from this book. And Sangharacha writes in this book, "We get to know ourselves best in relationship to other people." In relationship to other people. So I was really fascinated by this quote. So this is quite interesting, right? If you bring to mind someone in your life who kind of rubs you the wrong way, or you have kind of some aspect of that relationship that feels kind of and you tune into the qualities that you don't like, right? This is you may notice that the qualities that you do not like in other people are oftentimes the same qualities that you do not like within yourself. This is actually a truism within the realm of psychology. That which we don't like in other people tends to be very similar to what we don't like in ourselves. So it's very interesting when we enter into a relationship within the Sangha, into a spiritual relationship, spiritual friendship, and we bump up against each other's kind of likes and dislikes. And our likes and dislikes, you know, come together in a very discordant way. Yeah. So this has happened to me within the Sangha, and perhaps it's happened to you, right? Where I've had some difficult relationship or difficult interaction within the Sangha, whatever it may be. And then I suddenly think, oh, well, that person is difficult. So I just kind of block them out of my vision, actually. And I just avoid them. You know, I just block people out. So this is relating to people, again, in this from this principle of pleasure and pain. And that is basically not spiritual friendship. Spiritual friendship is the opposite of this. Spiritual friendship is actually encouraging us to come into deeper connection with each other And when we bump up against each other's, I don't like this, I don't like you, when we bump up against that, we may think of this, we may consider this to be, actually it's an opportunity for growth, for transformation. It's an opportunity to get to know ourselves better within the context of this relationship. It's a very tall order, because what it's requiring us to do, what we're invited to do, is actually to turn towards the stuff which we normally push away. And those things, the invitation again is to cultivate a sense of acceptance, cultivate a sense of non-judgment, just take in more, open the heart more. Right, so I find this juxtaposition quite interesting. This juxtaposition of active listening versus, yeah, but it's all about me. So perhaps you have been in a conversation or what feels like an argument with someone else where you don't quite feel heard, you don't quite feel seen. And, Yeah, but. So I know when I'm in this space of yeah, butting, I know that what's happening for me internally is I'm simply advocating for what I want, you know. And basically what I'm saying is, yeah, but it's all about me. And then if the other person is doing the same thing, No, you don't get it. No, it's not about you. It's actually about me. And this is what happens. The story of me just starts to butt heads. And when that happens, we actually have two different choices. Well, there's an infinite number of choices, really. But in terms of these two choices, one choice is to just, whatever. See you later. It's been fun, but I gotta run. So I quite like this about community, right? Community is great except for the people. Here's my other little sangha. Come here, let's be friends. Oh, that's close enough. That's a little too close, a little too close for comfort. So we can actually hold people at arm's length. We can actually block them out. We can put these little invisible skull and crossbones around, I'm not going to go there with that person. We can do these things. And then what happens then is those relationships kind of get frozen in time. They just get stuck. They get fixed. So how can we move out of this? What's the other way of relating within a spiritual context? This idea of spiritual friendship. And this involves actually taking the story of me, right? And this is actually a really important thing. The story of me is important. So the invitation here is not to just throw the story of me out, but rather, this is the story of me. And then the invitation here is to broaden our awareness to include the story of you, and the story of you, and the story of you. To actually get curious about what the other person is feeling and thinking. So oftentimes, when this happens, it's usually around, well, maybe not always usually, there can be miscommunication, and there can be misinterpretation. So we can never actually know what another person is actually thinking and feeling unless we actually ask them. And then when we ask them, we actually need to listen to what they're saying. And this is active listening. So when we engage in active listening, when we cultivate active listening, what is really happening here is we're just taking the story of me and we're just setting it aside. And we're inviting a dialogue with another person. Huh. So rather than locking horns, yeah, but, this is what I want, this is what I want, huh? We can actually get curious about first what's going on internally with us, what's going on internally with me. And then we can actually get curious about what's going on with the other person and just come into dialogue. So this is actually a very tall order. It's no easy feat. So there's a number of skills that are needed or very helpful around following this path. So there is definitely the skill of resilience. So it's hard to turn towards stuff we don't like. Yeah, it's hard. It's unpleasant. And within Buddhism, there is this idea of cultivating skill, developing skill. So all the qualities that are described in Buddhism of patience and understanding and empathy and energy and compassion, kindness, all these skills, resilience, clarity. In Buddhism, these qualities are all described as skills which can be developed, that can be cultivated. So we can actually cultivate resilience, emotional resilience. So what this means is we have to have a sense of when we engage in these friendships, especially the friendships when they start to go a little rough, and we want to move into those relationships, we want to connect more deeply, connect more authentically. Before we can do that, we have to just tune in, check in with ourselves, just to ask ourselves the question of, do I have the emotional resilience to engage with this right now? Maybe the answer is yes, maybe the answer is no. So we have to be wise about our own level of resilience, our own level of energy. So for example, I know personally that when I'm kind of tired, I haven't been sleeping enough, kind of sleep deprived, or if it's late at night, that's usually a really bad time for me to engage in any sort of crucial conversation. I know that about myself. That doesn't necessarily stop me, but at least I know it. So this is why it's so important to really, tune in. So it starts with ourselves, caring for ourselves, and then this process of expanding that care to include other people. So there's resilience, active listening. When we're so wrapped up in the story of me, I'm sure we're all familiar with this experience of, rather than listening, we're waiting to talk. So it's very interesting in this active listening of just noticing what's going on internally. Are we actually listening? To what extent are we actually listening? So it's so easy to not listen. It's so easy. Right? We've just got all this stuff going on in our heads. Blah, 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 blah. Just constant chatter in our heads. Right? And it's very interesting. Actually, you can notice this. Immediately at the conclusion of this evening, when you start chatting with someone, before you head home, just notice when you're talking with them, just notice what else is going on in your head. How present are you? So active listening really requires us to be present, which is also not that easy. This is also a skill that we actually need to cultivate. Active listening. Yeah, so I'd like to say something now about stories. Yeah. So community, it's really about stories. Community is about stories. It's about sharing our stories. So in terms of stories, stories also are the vehicle of wisdom. Yes, wisdom. So around indigenous cultures, traditional indigenous cultures, very much use stories as a way of teaching, teaching stories. That's what these myths are about, stories, these that capture some universal human experience and some universal experience of learning. So our stories actually are a way of conveying wisdom. Our stories are also a way of connecting with each other, of feeling a part of something that's greater than us. So it's through our stories that we actually enter into community. It's through our stories that we actually co-create this community. So one of the practices that's done within this community, this Sri Ratna community, is actually the process of sharing life stories. Yeah. And this is it's actually a very, very powerful practice. So I've done this a number of times. And I would say the most fascinating thing that I've experienced about sharing life stories or hearing the life stories of another person is hearing the life story of somebody that I don't like, right? Somebody who I tend to kind of, evasive maneuvers. Huh? And then to enter into this space of sharing stories, of active listening, of accepting what is being offered without judgment, to hear the story of another person, to really see them as another human being that has hopes and fears just like me. We can begin to see in this sharing of stories that those people who we kind of don't like or who we think is our adversaries or kind of rub us the wrong way, we may see in their stories that they're actually not as different as we thought, not as other as we thought, not so separate. We may actually discover a sense of kinship in this process of telling stories. So telling stories, telling our life stories, it also requires us to show up. It requires us to show up. So the interesting thing about telling life stories is nobody can tell your life story except for you. You must show up to tell a life story. Now, life stories, they also basically do this thing, which I like to call, for me, it's one of the most important aspects of Sangha, of spiritual friendship. So in spiritual friendship, for me, what I consider to be the most important thing is showing up, speaking, and being seen and being heard. To be seen and to be heard by another person, I think, is the essence. One of the essences of spiritual friendship. And then to also see and hear another person. So this mutual experience, this reciprocated experience of both being seen, being heard, and seeing another person and hearing another person. That this, to me, in my mind, is actually the essence of spiritual friendship. So the reason I'm going on and on about telling life stories is because I'm actually previewing what's going to be on offer on Saturday during the day retreat. So this Saturday, 10 to 4 p.m. here, we'll be doing a day retreat on spiritual friendship. And we will be sharing life story snippets. Yeah, so it will be an opportunity to share our stories with each other. So I'm quite looking forward to that. Let's see. Now I would like to say one last thing about the Metta-bhavana and its relationship to spiritual friendship. So one of the last things we spoke about last week was two types of happiness. So here, in this story of me, in this chasing our tails, running around in circles, there's a statement here, I am happy. And then also up here, in terms of the goal of the spiritual life, there's a statement here of happiness that is reliable at all times and under all conditions. And I spoke about the difference in these two types of happiness. So this happiness arises from feeding a craving that is insatiable. This demanding, I must have, I must have, I must have. And no matter how much you get, it's never enough. So this type of happiness, there is pleasure there. And it's actually depleting. It's kind of exhausting, you know, this image of running around in circles. Versus this happiness, I spoke of as being actually nourishing. Happiness that is reliable at all times and under all conditions. So in terms of the Metta-bhavana, so in the Metta-bhavana, in the first stage of the Metta-bhavana, we bring ourselves to mind. And the way that it's traditionally taught is then we will recite this phrase, may I be happy, may I be well. Then we bring a good friend to mind, we do the same, may you be happy, may you be well. A neutral person, then a difficult person, then all beings. But I think this idea of may you be happy, may you be well, is actually a really interesting thing, a way to do this practice. Because we're actually talking about the happiness that is reliable at all times and under all conditions when we actually say this. So it's very interesting. If you do the Metta-bhavana and if you have tried on these phrases of may I be happy, may I be well, and perhaps they're not evocative for you, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. But if you're not quite comfortable, or that doesn't quite fit for you, something about it doesn't feel right, you might try this. Is rather than saying, may I be happy, may I be well, you can try this out. May I dwell in the happiness that is reliable at all times and under all conditions. It's a very different flavor. This is actually pointing at liberation. And then when you bring another person to mind, and here I'll actually just jump to the difficult person, the person that rubs you the wrong way, the spiritual friend, someone in this sangha who rubs you the wrong way. And you might try this out, rather than may you be happy, may you be well. Many people I've spoken to, including myself, can sometimes feel as if that sort of way of practicing may you be happy, may you be well, can feel like painting something on top of what's actually happening. It can actually kind of feel a little, what's going on? So if you've ever kind of gotten into that sort of a pickle with a metta-bhavana, you might try this with that difficult purpose, with that difficult person. You might try this. May you dwell in the happiness that is reliable at all times and under all conditions. May you dwell in the happiness that is reliable under all time, at all times and under all conditions. This is fundamentally what spiritual friendship is getting at. That we can actually do this together. And actually within the context of spiritual friendship, it's an ideal container for this. Right? Because the person sitting across from you, you have absolutely no control over them. Yeah. So it's an ideal situation to work with. Yeah. So I think I'm going to stop there. And so we've got another 5 minutes. So if there are any questions or comments, you're welcome to go right ahead.